Hello, and thank you for choosing this Analyst Insight podcast from the Information Security Forum. Hello to everyone who is tuning in regularly. I hope we are keeping you entertained and informed. Soon, you are going to be able to say you were listening before it was cool to tune into this podcast. But if this is your first time listening, then where have you been, man? We've missed you. You've got so much to catch up on. And thank you, everyone, for the continued support. We're getting some really good numbers, quite a big audience here. So, yeah, thanks again. Tell your friends, tell your colleagues. Let's keep it going. We want these podcasts to handle lots of different issues. So if there is a topic we should pursue, if you have questions and comments, or heaven forfend, we've got something wrong, please let us know. mark.ward@securityforum.org is where I can be reached. But there's also contact details on the audio page where every episode is available. This episode marks the start of the research effort for the next edition of Threat Horizon. And we'll be talking about the state of the world, putting it to rights, and lamenting that it was different and, to be honest, better when we were young, well, when some of us were young. To help with that discussion, we've got ISF experts who have ushered Threat Horizon through several of its incarnations and those who are going to see it through its next one as well. My name is Mark Ward. I'm a senior research analyst at the ISF, and I'll be one of the authors of Threat Horizon 2026. That's the cover date. I've stepped away from it for a couple of years, but just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. Extra points for knowing the source of that quote. Also here is Richard Absalom, a principal analyst at the ISF who oversaw the last big overhaul of Threat Horizon structure, the last one before this one, if you see what I mean. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Mark. Nice to be here again. Yes, feels like I've been involved in Threat Horizon man and boy, because I've got that much older since I started working on it.
You're definitely a man. Definitely a man now, I think. But do you miss it, or are you happy to watch from the side? Do you flinch every time someone mentions Threat Horizon?
There is a little bit of stress every time it comes up and thinking, oh yeah, those were some fun Decembers and Januaries. But like yourself, yeah, we're never, as analysts on this team, we're never fully out of it. Even though I only led two, but 2019 and 2020, ISF veterans may remember those editions. I've been involved from the kind of equality and... Yes, yeah, well, I don't think we got too many of them right in 2020 especially, but, you know, yes, I've been involved on the quality side every year since, and kind of, you know, overseeing, doing the peer reviews and overseeing a lot of the projects. So it's always a fun one to be involved in the sense of we just get such a big remit to go and look at the world, as you said, and what's going on with it, and then come up with disaster scenarios. And it's also a difficult one to work on. Yes, some really tight timelines and just trying to get everything tight and clear. So yeah, challenging, but you get out what you put in. So it's always a rewarding one, and we love to see it published.
Yeah, and Max and I will strive hard to give you lots of quality. Lots of things to run the quality ruler over.
If that's lots to pick over.
Speaking of Max, also here is Max, who was lead author last year. We saw some big changes made to the report. I shared those through with Lee Munson. And the changes were about how we frame the threats and the advice that it passes on. Hello, Max.
Hello, Mark. Yeah, glad to be back on the podcast. It's been a while since I've done one of these. But... yeah, and even more so looking forward to doing Threat Horizon 2026 with yourself.
Yeah, because you've become a bit of a threat expert, I think. You've done the rewrite of Threat Intelligence paper, you've done Threat Horizon, you're all threats all the time.
I know, so I think it's, yeah.
Are you completely paranoid now? Do you take the same route home twice, ever?
Yeah, I almost have to have a bit of a decompression before I walk in the door at home. I think, yeah, the biggest or the scariest moment was waking up in the middle of night during writing of Threat Horizon 2025, thinking about the future of data management. So that
man,
was,
that
yeah,
is some moment. Wow.
Some micro-care, yeah.
Whew, that's a nightmare right there. But I mean, joking aside, I think the looking at Threat Horizon and just having worked in some busy newsrooms when, you know, the world is sort of being piped into the sort of feeds and things you see, it does feel like the world is a pretty scary place right now. And I think if we can start with that sort of, if we can, like, what worries you the most? I mean, I can go first, but it's that uncertainty. I think it's just that I don't know what's going to happen, which is not a good place to be. As a younger fella, I don't know if you share the same because you've grown up with this or whether you just got used to it.
Yeah, that is a good point. It's a difficult one to really consider because it's hard to know whether people have always maybe just felt like this around these ideas of uncertainty and, you know, whether we kind of view ourselves as this sort of special group now dealing with something much worse than before. But I think, yeah, personally, the biggest kind of worry for me, there's two really. One, which is more tangible, which is probably the issues around the climate and the environment, which are very pressing and have definitely been bred into my generation. But I think one as well, which is slightly more kind of subtle and nuanced than that, is just the general connection and relationship between technology and people. And I think really that's probably where a lot of this uncertainty is born from, and trying to think maybe where that blurred line might sit in the future, and actually sort of what we might go through to get to that point, which is it's exciting but also scary at the same time, thinking, you know, what might we have to deal with going forward.
Yeah, I think again it's that uncertainty and just trying to get a grasp on, you know, those big changes and what you have to do to be ready for them, really. Mm-hmm. Bring you into this, Richard, I don't know, is that and certainly one of that uncertainty does make me worry for my children. I think because, you know, I think when I was younger, there was a certain amount of some things you could rely on and some paths you could plot through this. But you've got two young kids, so apart from them, what keeps you up at night, Richard?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't have to worry about reports to keep you up at night, because it's, yeah, 6-month-old and 2-year-old do that job for me. But yeah, thinking, you know, from their generation ahead, I definitely agree with Max on the climate side of things. You kind of worry what is coming, and the off the back of that, the massive cost and societal changes that will come off the back of that. I think, you know, there's a lot of people, I'm not sure if it's a lot of people, but a lot of the press complaining about migration, etc. at the moment, especially in the UK. And you imagine what that is going to look like once certain parts of the earth become uninhabitable. If you think it's bad now, just you wait and see. So that's a worrying. Not so much the idea of immigration is worrying for me, just the fact that there's so much change to come and that the world is not prepared for it. And alongside that, related to technology, I think related to technology and human fallibility is just the spread of misinformation and the idea that there's going to be whole tranches of people that will literally not understand truth from, you know, fact from fiction. There's going to be a narrative spread around, and they can all be amplified, of course, we know, through via machine learning, AI. That's all going to pick up, and it's that feels like something I'd never used to have to worry about. People always used to complain, the journalists get things wrong and the media's wrong, but it didn't have these social media boxes and platforms to spread, let's face it, utter rubbish a lot of the time. So that's a worrying state of affairs.
Yeah, speaking as a former journalist, the unofficial motto of BBC News was never wrong for long, because people always pointed it out when we got things and we were mistaken, which, you know, I mean, the BBC did a very good job in trying circumstances. But I think just to take the first one, I suppose, then, is climate change, because it does feel like sort of one of those things that definitely is that uncertainty around it, because clearly things have got pretty bad pretty quickly, but there's a lot of measures out there, there's a lot of people saying they just don't know what's going to happen, because you're messing with a very big complicated system and you're throwing a load of more energy in it, and who knows how bad it's going to get. I don't know, Max, you said that you sort of, it does worry you a lot, so coping with that, tricky.
I think it's worrying in many ways. I think from the individual point of view, it's sort of that feeling, you know, of that inability to affect change really at a big and larger scale, and ultimately you're kind of at the mercy of what, you know, governments, big organizations really decide to pivot on, or probably ultimately what makes most money in the short term. But it is quite a, you know, an existential problem really in many ways, thinking about, you know, there's a very delicate sort of ecosystem that we all exist in, and to, you know, try and not get too deep about it, it is quite an, you know, harrowing thoughts, kind of think, well, what this future may be. You know, it might not be for my generation, but, you know, certainly I think in the next couple, at least, it might really substantially change the way people actually, you know, live and interact. And that's, you know, something that would, you know, require a really big shift in, you know, practices and you know, business and just the approach to life really. So to try and think about that now is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of climate change news is bad, as we said, but I did specifically look this morning for some good news on the climate change. And there is actually, but not for the first time, but so it's a growing trend that there is more money being spent on renewable energy sources than there is being put into fossil fuels. And there's still a huge amount being put into those fossil things, but there's a lot of places where that, but equally, that's only going to head off a certain amount of the damage that's going to be done. And I think to your point, Richard, as well, it's the impact it's going to have on people as well. That's tricky.
I don't think people have thought through long term, and Threat Horizon deals with the next few years generally, but you know, we think long term, people haven't thought, okay, the cost of everything now, what it could, you know, how much the cost of living crisis, etc., the amount we're all having to pay for fuel. I don't think people have factored in just how expensive it's going to be to repair anything or deal with any of the damage caused by, you know, potential, you know, long-term global heating. I mean, it's just going to be a completely different order of cost required to live, and to repair any kind of damage from disasters, etc. So, yeah, that way, again, that kind of short-term thinking tends to worry me, which I guess is a good place to be in when you're writing something like Threat Horizon, because we're trying to think a little bit further out and get organizations to think beyond the immediately what's in front of you.
Yeah, I think so. We certainly, Max and I have been thinking about the big trends for the next report and those critical uncertainties, and climate change has to frame one of those, I would have thought.
Yeah, I think it's probably, yes, part of a growing trend really of how these, you know, seemingly like elements or these trends or themes that are emerging, which don't seem ultimately part of that day-to-day sort of business approach, are starting to become, you know, much clearer considerations for the entirety of businesses. And it's kind of a reflection of what probably cybersecurity and information security has done over the last couple of years, about it's, you know, spreading out towards the business. It's not this, you know, siloed problem anymore. And I think that's, you know, ultimately where, or hopefully where things like, in, you know, environmental change and some of those other challenges will become as well.
Yeah, I think as well, and something else to consider is those demographic changes, because I think, as you said, Rich, just if bits of the world become uninhabitable, then people are going to have to move and going to have to go either north or south, and there's going to be some significant changes in where people live and how nations organise themselves, because there's a lot of people to help there, and it's not clear yet that the politics is of a tenor that will actually be happy to help those people. So I think, again, just thinking about those broader trends, there's a lot of sort of difficult political decisions and to be made about how to handle those kind of things. But also, just there's a couple of other things that I've come across, which is in terms of those demographics, that the China in particular is a strange case, because it's, you know, we had the one child per family policy, and that has effectively stunted the growth of its middle class, which would lead to all kinds of economic, bump up in economic growth. So actually, it's becoming quite a polarized society, that, you know, the buying power is either the rich folks or the government, and middle people don't have kids. Middle class people don't have kids. So there's, you know, there's less political activism there as well. So that's going to be an interesting one to see how that, you know, perhaps solidifies or becomes a bit static. Africa, there's a lot of countries with very young populations, and Asia, Latin America, lots of new people going online. So I think on the people side, there's tons happening, and again, for Threat Horizon, that's interesting, because we all know InfoSec has a big recruitment skills talent problem.
I think there's kind of a trope that people tend to fall into, which is just, you know, assuming the future will play out exactly how the past has done. And I think just some of those points you're mentioning there, Mark, about, you know, population and demographic shifts could really, you know, fundamentally change things. And it's, you know, it might not be a continuation of the traditional superpowers, you know, how we see them now, butting heads and, you know, having those spheres of influence which they battle over, but actually just a shift and change in that, especially, you know, younger populations, more people coming online. So I think it's important to consider that and to think about those preparations and what you can do, or just to be aware of it and to think, you know, in a slightly more critical way about the future.
Yeah, I think a lot of organisations, don't know if you've seen this, Rich, I know you've done quite a bit of work on supply chains thinking about sort of how organisations are structured across the world. But I guess organisations, it'll be good if they were more international, though it's going to be harder to work that way, because those places will have different regulations, and, you know, supply chains, they can't do the same thing across all the links in that chain.
Yeah, I think it's possible you might see further, you know, we've had an era of globalization, and it's quite possible that you get back to a more kind of fractured regional-based system where it becomes actually more difficult to work across, across borders due to the different regulation, etc. There's no telling on some of this. It could be that we're going to have a realigning of superpowers that, you know, kind of, or emergence of new superpowers based on new demographics. For instance, you know, India is a rising power, you know, huge. We'll see the population of India is about to take over China, or already has. you know, there's a huge, there's, you know, just so much development that, that could go on in various different countries. It's difficult to plan more than a few years in advance, I think. But yeah, certainly, I think we might see rise of technocracies as well, kind of we're already seeing it. When you look at big tech and the power that the big organizations have, the potential that, you know, enterprises, organizations end up having more global sway and power than the states. You know, where does that end?
Yeah, because I was thinking about that just because there's a very good science fiction book that I've struggled to read because it's the ideas are so out there, which is to do with people not having you're not English, you're not French, you're not Chinese, you're not Spanish, or something like that. You ally yourself with a particular way of viewing the world. And some of them are particularly technocratic, some of them are a bit more hippy-dippy and green and sort of worried about the climate and things like that. And it just, and that's what matters when it comes to the rights and privileges and what, the way you live your life. But I think, but it feels like we're already there. If you do a lot on Facebook, you're different to the people who don't do a lot on Facebook, because I'm certainly not there, but I, you know, people quote, I definitely judge people who say, I saw it on Facebook.
Possibly, yeah, you know, I think, well, we're there to a certain extent. I think socially, you'd say, you know, someone of my background and class might have far more in common with, say, a similar background and class in Japan than someone in the UK, just in terms of how we think about the world. You know, and that might be true already, but we still have that control of the state. You know, we still definitely have different states in place managing our lives and everything around that. But yeah, maybe there's, do you see a drift away from that towards that kind of, yeah, grouping by outlook? Who knows?
You're the social media generation as a spokesman for your entire generation, please.
Yeah, speaking for us all. it definitely offers a much easier way of people, you know, going beyond the typical boundaries that you might think of in terms of, you know, stay or like that regional identity, to communicate in a way that often, I think, from my experience of social media, doesn't require the same identity that, you know, when we might think of as you as a person in sort of the real life, that people are often able to mask it and hide it. And actually what identifies them is, you know, their beliefs or their groups or their sort of followings in a way. So yeah, it's something that I've kind of tended to stay away from or try and shield myself from a little bit, but I've definitely kind of been an observer to that kind of those behaviors. And it's interesting how sort of, it's kind of like how quickly these sort of fires can start on social media, I think, and how quickly information can spread or these groups can form or they can, you know, trends can be at the, you know, the peak and at the, you know, top of the hype cycle, and they can just quickly go because of the most sort of innocuous thing.
Yeah, because I did see a story today on the BBC that was sort of something or other has caused controversy on social media, and I just thought, when does that ever not happen? I mean, you know, that surely that's the news
constant.
There. Yeah, every once in a while will be outraged. So I think often quite a lot of people. So yeah, I think it's curious how those things play through. But it does feel though that we're at a interesting pivot point in social media, because Facebook doesn't have the currency it used to. I mean, a lot of people are on there. Actually, billions of people are on there, so I can't discount that. But sort of Reddit has gone through a bit of a change. Twitter is clearly struggling. Certainly in the West, some of those things you used to rely on. I think what's it, the quote I saw, which was that, you know, it used to be the case of what there were. The net is just a group of five websites sharing screenshots of the other four.
Yeah,
I think that's probably how it used
very,
to be.
Very true.
But I think it's shattering a bit now. He's sort of getting TikTok. He's starting Mastodon, Blue Sky.
Yeah,
just those things seem to be peeling away a bit. Do you see that? Yeah. Just as your consumption of those changed?
I don't think not my personally, but they do seem to have kind of the four or five main pillars of sort of social media or the internet, and then you have the kind of the offshoots, and they do sort of balloon, but ultimately people come back because that's where the popularity is. Or in the case of Twitter or X, as it's now been dubbed, it's monetized as well, and people are actually able to make money off it. And I think that sort of changes it. It becomes much more sort of short form, you know, snippets of information that are provocative, because ultimately people know that if they get people, you know, they make an incorrect statement or some slightly edgy one, people will reply or they'll comment, and that gains them ultimately money at the end of the day. So it's smart because it is a strategy. And I think these things are more well thought out and thought through than what might first.
I think I would be classified as a social media lurker. in the sense that I don't really post much on, you know, professional or personal. WhatsApp pretty much ties me together with family and people that I want to be in touch with. But of course, that is very cleverly owned by a social media.
Yes, that's actually Facebook.
But yeah, I put myself more as an observer and see what trends are, you know, what people are posting. But I don't see it as a useful place to engage in any kind of logical argument. It's just not, is it? It's a shouting match, and I'd rather,
Who goes to Facebook for reasoned impact, you know, impartial observations?
Exactly. It did just make me think it's a bit like media, we've seen the people getting annoyed with the cable subscriptions, paying for loads of stuff that they never used, so they decided to go to Netflix instead, where they get all their content that's a lot cheaper, etc. Mm. And then suddenly now there's, what, 10 different streaming platforms that you have your options for. And maybe maybe in time they'll end up back on cable because, we'll just pay one fee and get everything together. And I wonder if there's something similar happening in social media. There'll be ebbs and flows between, dominant platforms that everyone's on to, a more kind of divided up market, or where there's lots of different options available, and then people will realize they want more contact with more people and go back to a kind of central dominant one again. Who knows, it could just be an ebb and flow of preferences.
I think there are some, because certainly my boys were sort of in their late teens, their use of social media, again, they're like you, they lurk a lot and they follow a few people, and if they want to talk to their friends, then I think they do some stuff via WhatsApp, share images, and they have a group chat. And they use Discord a bit, but I don't, they're not, but equally I've got friends who have daughters and they seem to use a lot more Instagram and a lot more, it seems to be a sort of bit of a, gender divide there, though I'm massively generalizing, of course.
Yeah, maybe. I think it's, because I don't know, I was thinking then when Rich was talking about, my initial reaction was, but the kind of, what's interesting about platforms like Twitter or Facebook or Instagram is because they're so enormous, they're used by everybody. And, there's all different types of factions and groups of people and individuals on it, chatting and conversing and finding their groups. But actually, I think, when you do have those offshoots like Discord, they do tend to be, used for a more particular reason. It's often associated, or at least in my mind, with, gaming or that those kind of worlds and those kind of groups. So, maybe it isn't as centralized as what it might seem. I don't know. It's interesting. Maybe it needs digging into a bit more.
I suppose the other question is sort of how much does it matter? I mean, I guess a lot of organizations do sample a lot of that stuff that's on there, and it is a good source of some consumer sentiment and things. But I guess in the future, there'll be more of that, and it'll just be harder to navigate. And I guess behind a lot of this as well is, to your point, Rich, earlier about AI, sort of how that will shape all those things, because that's a lot of what's happened at the moment is obviously those services are shutting down or closing off because they're getting crawled by AI systems that want proper human contact to sample.
I'm looking forward to the social media for AI that must surely be developed probably within the next couple of years, where AI can make contact with other AIs.
Well, I think isn't most traffic on the net already bots talking to other bots or something like that?
Quite possibly, looking at some of these, looking at our listeners,
we are all human.
Looking at some of the accuracy of some of the comments out there, that would make sense. This is just, if you're going to just attribute everything on Facebook to these are just bots hallucinating again, then that'll make life easier to understand.
Well, there is a conspiracy theory that says the net actually is just full of bots and everything is fake, which is, I think, is a reasonable way to approach the world, but not that reasonable.
Doesn't stand up to daily experience, but apart from that,
but there are a lot of. But I think it is that sort of, to your point, Max. These things are splintered, and people have very strange views of the world because they're not getting anything like a unfiltered reality. Everything is fucking.
They're just very interesting to kind of think about, pontificate in this way, really, because they are such interesting cases, and they really do influence and shape. So much that I don't know, it's quite funny that we're kind of sat here talking about it now and try to jump to all find the root cause of all this. I'm sure we might have, or hopefully have, some younger listeners who think we sound ridiculous talking through this, but there is something really interesting behind all this.
Yeah, there's definitely something going on. Yeah, I think, whether it's what it will boil down to, I don't know. But it does feel like whether it's AI driven or something, just the reality, yeah, just those things will get even more skewed and strange. And certainly whenever you use those things, it starts to try and adapt to you, and then you push back and you get weird results.
Yeah,
it gets annoying.
I think they've definitely over the last, maybe last 12 months or so, become more difficult to use, in the sense of there's more friction there in terms of recognizing when things are being pushed. Or I think I typically used Twitter primarily for football news and football scores and results, which, you know, for a few years was relatively easy and seamless just to log on and keep up to date. But yeah, I've definitely noticed a change in that it's pushing me to things, or it's giving me suggestions and that sort of the kind. Which is,
it has to be said as well, I think we've all got a lot more savvy, but just we know when these things are being done to us. I think it's not just like, oh, look at that, I'm just accept it. It's we're definitely skeptical about it. But the good thing about to try and do something that Threat Horizon should do is look behind all these things. So thinking about our closing thoughts, because for me, I guess organizations just need to be better at handling change. Because there isn't going to be much uncertainty, and I think that's a sort of, if there's a lesson here, it's get ready for that. I think some of the conversations we've had are going to steal your phrase here, is it sort of active preparation kind of thing, that sort of active preparedness, just to sort of be aware that things are going to change and you're going to have to get kind of come to terms with that. So don't you, Max or Rich, just there's digging behind things, what's the big trend you see here?
I was going to say, I mean, it's, you literally, you don't, you prepare for everything. You don't know what to expect. And that's, that's entirely the reason we changed that format of Threat Horizon last year, and we're going to carry on in that format this year, of looking at scenarios rather than absolute predictions, because we think that's the most helpful way of dealing with uncertainty and change. There are a few different scenarios that could pan out. You can make decisions yourself as to what's most likely. But yeah, as I've said before, none of us have got a crystal ball. If we did, I'm pretty sure we wouldn't be doing this job. We'd be predicting lottery numbers or playing the stock market or something.
There's an AI for that, I'm sure.
Probably is. But we've got to be, thinking ahead. What might happen? What does all this mean for your organization? What more important, where does it point? What direction does the world go in? And then how does that impact your organization? What is the environment that you have to operate in? What do your customers think and do, and what are they after? It's a big old world out there. There's lots of, so many different intangibles and tangible scenarios and factors that could have an impact. Just kind of being resilient and agile at the same time to deal with change is, I think, what the best that organizations can hope for or can aim to do.
Yeah, I kind of echo that really. And I think, we've been trying to, the past couple of weeks, Marcus, really dig down to what sits behind these sort of surface level trends like social media and climate change and things like that. And I don't know, something which really comes out of it, which is a bit more general, but we've tried to push, is around just the idea of communication and that pattern recognition, I think, because it's, so important for the cross-pollination of different teams and groups within organizations, and to try and just keep on top of these trends and these emerging patterns, because we really push for people and our members and organizations to prepare for as much as possible. But ultimately, what we're telling them to prepare for does become the reality at some point as we move through the years. And I think trying to get as much preparation or that early oversight of these changes and shifts in direction is the most important thing. And to try and group up the collective knowledge of different people and, different skill sets is the best way probably of doing that going forward.
So just to summarize then, in a very journalistic kind of way, I kind of feel like we're saying ready, steady, go here, that you organizations need to get ready to cope with whatever the world throws at them, steady the ship, make sure they're in a position to make the most of it. That resilience, that agility needs to be there as well. And then once you've understood how the changes are going to be made, go and just make that change happen. It is that active awareness and that preparation that organizations need. Thank you everybody for participating today. You can now find ISF podcasts on all major podcast platforms. Look for our page on Audio Boom, where you can subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode. And who would want to do that? The podcasts are also available at securityforum.org, where you can also learn more about ISF research, tools, and guidance.